Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Sportsmanlike Conduct Podcast. This is your host, Brian Argott. I'm really glad to be back here on the show. Today, I'm going to be talking to NBA. I'm going to start, got the first two playing games, actually four playing games done, wrapped them up. And then we have our next two to figure out the seeding for the eighth seed and kind of get the playoffs underway. Tomorrow we have both games. We have the Bulls and the Heat going against each other in Miami. Big news today that coming from this game is Jimmy Butler is now out, and they said he's going to miss several weeks. He was sort of limping around last night in the game. Big win for the Sixers, and we'll recap all that. But just kind of want to get to this Jimmy Butler news first. This is huge. I mean, obviously Butler being the best player on the Bulls or on the Heat, him to miss multiple weeks. Obviously, you know, he caught lightning in a bottle last year. Don't get me wrong. I know there's this thing about playoff Jimmy, but look, I mean, he has not been that player all year. He has, he's a little older. I mean, you know, you could get hot in a playoff run. But he definitely was not that player all year, and neither was this Heat team. I would be shocked if they did any kind of push without Jimmy Butler. I'm going to favor the Bulls in this game. I mean, I know the Heat are still favored. They're -1.5, but you know, I would kind of favor the Bulls in this matchup, especially the ass kicking they gave the Hawks last night. And it is the Hawks. You can't take anything against them. But I mean, the one thing I guess for the Heat is they still have Eric Spoelstra and can never bet against that guy, being ready for one game, especially against this Bulls team that's like so Jekyll and Hyde. But if Kobe White can play how he played last night and the Bulls have better scoring, and that was the one thing I saw in the Miami game last night, is when the Sixers just turned it on in that third quarter. There was, you know, obviously Batum, and let's kind of recap about that game last night. Sixers and Heat. The Heat were up by as much as 13. I was looking at the live bet. I'm like, oh my God, you know, you can live bet the thing of the Sixers. One point was like +7. You got them at like +300. And then in coming out of the timeout, it was just this quick change of events. Like Maxey turned up the energy. He was attacking. You had Batum knocking down every threes. He turned into Ray Allen last night. And the announcers, I forget who it was, and they said he's been in the league now for 16 seasons. I was like, Jesus Christ. I knew Batum has been around that long, but I didn't realize it was 16 seasons. That was just like, damn. I mean, it kind of goes back to how long Kevin Love has kind of been in the league. But, the Heat, they could not answer what the Sixers had. I mean, everything, the Sixers kind of did whatever they wanted. They turned it up defensively. Butler, again, he was limping around, but even still, like in that second half, he couldn't even get going. He got hurt in the first half. He got hurt in the first quarter, played okay throughout the second quarter. Then in the third quarter, he sort of was holding that knee, and that was big. Tyler Hero hit some big shots in that game, like some really just clutch threes, and he's an awesome player, and I could not believe that more teams did not want to go after him in a trade this last year for that kind of score. He would be awesome on Orlando. I love him on Orlando. They would try to make a trade for him. But yeah, but Bam, you know, he took some shots. It was just no one really could figure it out. But one player for the Heat who I got to say was awesome, and he was fearless, was Jaime Jaquez. I mean, that guy was freaking awesome. Flying around, definitely did not spot away from the his first playoff game. And, you know, more credit to him. He's going to be an awesome player in the years to come, and it's going to be a big part of that Heat team. What a steal that they got in that guy. But yeah, I talking about the Sixers, Embiid looked gassed, but the one thing I got to give to Embiid is he finished with 23 points, but he had five like really crucial assists, like drawing the defense out and just taking the focus and being on him. That was the one important thing about the Embiid game. Now, going forward in how the rest of the playoffs are going to play out, they play the Knicks now. And, oh man, that is going to be a really interesting matchup, because how the Knicks will try to handle Embiid, how the Sixers are going to go up and really try to make everybody else beat them besides Brunson. Can they contain Brunson, who has been out of his mind this year? That's going to be a big, big task. I wonder if the Knicks will have enough firepower to beat the Sixers, because I think the Sixers offensively have more firepower than the Knicks. They're going to be depending on guys like DiVincenzo to really step up, and he stepped up a lot this year, but playoffs are a different animal. DiVincenzo does have playoff experience with the Warriors, so I think he can handle it. It's just going to be a really fun series between those two teams. And, you know, we're still waiting for, the winner of that Heat matchup between them and the Bulls, and they'll be playing the one seed. It's like, cool, we're going to play the one seed, and, you know, it's just going to be a gauntlet against that Celtics team. I mean, if I was a Celtics fan, I'd be rooting for the Heat to win that, even though the Heat beat them last year. I mean, now with no Jimmy Butler, it's like, cool, let's play them. Let's get this series over with, because, God, I would almost imagine that would be a sweep, especially because they would want some revenge. But I would not want to see that Bulls team if I'm them, because the Bulls could make that series a little spicy. I'm not going to say the Celtics are going to lose that series, but they could make it spicy. I see that going like six games, as opposed to where the Heat without Butler, I mean, that seems like it would be a wrap pretty quick. But let's go into the West. Let's sort of touch on the Kings Warriors. I mean, I was just so disappointed in Golden State. I mean, God. I mean, look, all good stories come to an end. I mean, we've seen dynasties come to an end. I'm not going to say this is over, because I do think all three of their core will come back. I do think Draymond and Thompson and Curry will come back. I mean, I guess it's going to be up to Clay, because he's a restricted free agent or something. But, you know, Clay went 0 of 10 in that game. I mean, I know he's not who he used to be, but you would have told me that Clay would go 0 of 10, 0 of 6 and 3, just in a really game decide, you know, elimination game. Like, it's really awful. And Curry, who had 22 points, there's been something wrong with Curry lately. He's been hurt. He's been slow. He's carried this team, I mean, all year. This team who's dealt with injuries, Draymond stuff, Clay up and downs, Andrew Wiggins being out here and there. It's just like, I just don't know where you go with this team. I know one thing I would not do is I would not get rid of Kuminga. Kuminga is just that guy. Just keep him. I mean, Curry, obviously, he's not going anywhere. I think Dre and Clay come back. I just don't know what kind of trades they would have. I'd be curious to see if they can make some other signings. But I do like some of the players. I think Chris Paul has one more year, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's a free agent, actually. But they have to get more shooting. I mean, who would have thought losing DiVincenzo would have done that? Because, I mean, they wiped Sacramento. Not wiped, but they won the 7 last year. And that was a big thing for them. Winning was having a guy like DiVincenzo do it. But, yeah. I think with the Kings now lining up to play, the Kings lining up to play the Pelicans, and Pelicans having no Zion. It's like, you know, the Bulls situation. They're lining up to play a Heat team with no Butler. I think out of the two missing pieces there, I think losing Butler is kind of more important to the Heat. But then again, the Pelicans, who, you know, the Heat saw Spoelstra. Willie Green's not a bad coach for the Pelicans, but he's not Spoelstra. And this Pelicans team, they've been there a few years ago. It's been a long time. But I don't think they will be – I don't know if they can handle this Kings team, who I think if with last year's push and the Kings are missing Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk, so maybe now it's more of an even matchup now that Zion's out. But Brandon Ingram did not look good in the Pelicans game. Yeah, he's still kind of playing, trying to find his way back. And if in order for the Pelicans to win this game, they're going to rely on Ingram a lot. And he looked terrible in the Lakers game. And maybe it was just because the Lakers know how to play them well. But yeah, Ingram was like 4-12 in that game. Did not look good. You don't know what you're going to get CJ McCollum. I just don't trust him. Offensively, I've seen him in the playoffs. I don't trust them at all. The guys that are going to step up are going to be like guys like Murphy, Troy Murphy and Herb Jones. It's like going to be those two guys. I think they could really lock down defensively. They could do really well there. But again, they're going to be really depending on those guys. And I wonder if, you know, De'Aaron Fox, and maybe he's going to kind of do whatever he wants. They're going to throw Herb Jones at him probably and try to lock him up defensively. But, you know, it's going to be a tall task to handle with the De'Aaron Fox. I think, you know, they might have, like, the Kings might have the two best players in the series. Like, if you're doing a draft of these teams in Zion being out, you're like, who would you take one? Well, you take De'Aaron Fox one. And then two, you look at the Pelicans, you're like, oh, you know, looking at Brandon Ingram, like, or Sabonis, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to take Sabonis, you know, a guy who's been consistent all year, played really well in the playoffs last year, and I think the Kings are going to eventually pull it out, and they'll be the 8 seed, and we're going to look at this Pelicans season as like, man, what a disappointment. You know, it sucks as Zion got hurt. It's like unbelievable, of course. We knew, it's like, we used to watch like the Clippers and the Hornets, and Chris Paul was on those teams, and it's like, oh, well, yep, Chris Paul, always getting hurt at the right, you know, at the worst time, not the right time, the worst time possible. And it was like, Zion, there we go. This is it. It's like Zion getting hurt again, worst time possible. It's like, man, I just feel bad for the Pelicans. They have a really solid team, and their best player goes out. I've been a big Brandon Ingram fan. I still think he's just trying to play his way back into shape, but that guy who we saw in the 2021 playoffs, I don't know if he's going to be able to handle it, or 2022 playoffs. Yeah, but anyways, Ingram, if he could return to that guy, which I just don't know if he can in two days. So it's going to be really interesting. But yeah, so many questions going into the offseason. You know, you had rumors that already that the Mavericks are interested in Klay Thompson for the, you know, they would have some interest there. Curry said, of course, he wants all three to, you know, the core three to stay where they are. It's just, yeah. I mean, even the Heat have to wonder about where they go with Jimmy Butler going forward. I mean, again, that game's kind of up in the air, but it's like, yeah. But let's go in and talk some baseball. A lot of big games happening. We've already completed 10% of the season. We had Jackson Holliday got called up late last week, and he started off a little rough. I think like the biggest headlines going in is like Mike Trout is. Hit his eighth homer yesterday. Unbelievable. He leads the league in home runs, and he always starts off hot in April. I'm just glad to see this guy healthy. There's 2 years ago where there was like Trout's gonna, you know, never play baseball again because of his back. It was like a total like over exaggeration. I forgot the writer who came out with that. Trout obviously is not, and he has 8 home runs, and he's been tremendous so far. And I guess the biggest news going on this weekend is like the biggest running joke is, and baseball is how the umpires have somehow put themselves at the forefront of this. And when I mean umpires, I mean Angel Hernandez, who is an absolute train wreck for the league. I watched a game on Tuesday. It was the it was the Brewers and the Padres. Padres were having, it was like the one of the weirdest first innings ever watched. The Padres were like getting all like bunts and getting all these like crazy infield hits and all this stuff. Anyways, they were up like 4-0, and then when you think Wade Miley is pitching for the Brewers, and Wade Miley, who is a left-handed pitcher, is going up. He's already given up 4 runs, and Fernando Tatis is on first base. And then all of a sudden he gets called for this balk after, you know, he throws out Tatis at first base. It was an like one of the best pickoff moves I've seen in a while. And the first base umpire usually calls this, you know, usually calls the balk because they have the better point of view, but it was the home plate umpire. And it was Angel Hernandez. He's called. And it was just like, you know, the announcers, everyone was baffled. You know, Miley was pissed. Everyone was pissed. Fortunate enough, Miley does not give up another run after that he settles in. So luckily that it didn't really matter because the next guy struck out. And then Wyatt Linkford. This has been the most talked about one where, Wyatt Linkford had 3 balls way off the plate called strikes, and all 3 of them were by Angel Hernandez. And it was literally 1-2-3 strike call, and he struck out. It was just like Wyatt Linkford, who has, I mean, some amazing plate discipline. Like, this guy does not swing yet. Garbage. It's not Javi Baez. And it was like, wow. This guy, Angel Hernandez, is bad. And he's just been the talking point. It seems like every day, or, you know, almost this whole start of the season, it's kind of been Angel Hernandez has been on the news at least 4 or 5 times already. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, baseball needs to do something about this. I understand that the umpires have their union and you can't, like, I don't know, you can't fire the guy, but there has to be something when the umpires are literally swaying the game of, you know, changing everything. So it's like, wow, I just don't know where to go with this. And it's kind of really sad because, again, I like the umpires in there. I don't think, you know, when they have the game going, sorry about the car alarm in the back, kind of stinks, but you know, you record on anyway. Anyways, when the umpires are intruding in the game and they are doing that, it makes you really want to call for robot umps, and that's everyone's solution is robot umps. I'm all for it. I want it for the strike zone. Obviously, we're still going to have umpires in the game, just not calling the strikes. Because you're going to need them at first base for safe calls and other stuff, foul ball calls and all that. You're going to need not just first base, second base, third base, even home, you know, call for the strikeout and the call for batter time and all that. So you'll still have the umps in there. It won't be the old school way, which has been going on for years. But this is something that I think is the no-brainer now. Like, after just seeing stuff like this, and you see it all the time, where umpires will, they could change the perspective of an inning really quick by making really bad strike calls, to where, you know, it could literally mean a run that could have tied the game, or something to where it's like you put a runner on and it gives the team a chance. It's just like, there's so many scenarios to where I think the fans are just kind of tired of it, and they just want to see, they want to be right. You know, they just want everything to be right. You know, it's like, if it's a ball, it's a ball. If it's a strike, it's a strike. And we just, you know, baseball just needs to get this right. And I think this is a no-brainer to kind of have going. I know there's been a lot, and kind of transition from there, there's been a lot of stuff going on around baseball with the pitchers and their elbow issues and stuff like that. I was having a conversation with one of my clients yesterday who used to be a pitcher in high school and some in college. And then he blew out his shoulder, different kind of issue. But he has 3 kids who all have played sports, football, baseball, different sports. But one thing with his youngest, he talks about, he's like, you know, he thinks that kids should be, you know, this elbow issue isn't just an MLB problem. It's a full on all the way down to the youth leagues problem. Like, you know, with how I believe, you know, from coaching, like it's always, you know, from the scouts, oh, you need to throw as hard as you can. You need to have as much spin on the ball as you can, or else you're not going to get looked at by scouts. And this is a terrible way to look at it because, one thing was, we're telling these kids from the ages of 7, 8, 9, 10 to go full max when they're not even full developed. And they're throwing in very awkward motions. Like, you know, there are very few pitchers that have a really, fluid delivery. I remember Matt Harvey was a guy who had a very fluid delivery when he came up for the Mets. And then next year, Tommy John surgery. Still, like, you know, it doesn't matter how fluid your delivery is, but, you know, that's one thing that they try to talk about is that you have a really awkward delivery, you tend to have more elbow problems. But the thing is, anyways, we were talking and stuff. He thinks this goes all the way back down to the youth leagues. And also to dive more into that is like, not only these coaches talking about, you know, throw as hard as you can, you know, it's all about velocity and everything, but also maybe the other thing is too, is playing cross sports, getting your body used to like playing football, getting your body used to maybe playing basketball, like just, you know, everything like that, kind of to where you can make your body a little more athletic, and also maybe to just kind of give your body a break. That's what I mean by that. I think playing baseball year round is not a good idea for, especially for pitchers. Like, you know, maybe if you're a position player, it's different, but for pitchers, I think if that's your full time, you're throwing, you know, from the ages of, again, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, all the way up to high school, college. It's like, man, you're like just asking for this kind of injury. I mean, it's just, it seems like it's just bound to happen. Again, it's one of the more risk injuries. Like, you know, in your arm, you're like, just, that's all you do is throw, you throw, you throw. It's way different from a quarterback who's throwing a 10-yard ball. You're putting so much velocity and so much of a weird angle from it, you know, again, from baseball, and just trying to throw it as hard as you can. It's like, it takes that one little, you know, that one pitch and just puts it over the top, and like, man, I feel good today. And then all of a sudden you're like, man, there's so much strain and stuff like that. It goes out there. I don't think it's a pitch clock issue. I'm one of those people that just think, you know, you can kind of work between it. You don't need as much rest in between that. Maybe just don't throw as hard sometimes. You know, again, I know the game has been so much about velocity and bringing in bullpen arms to see who, you know, having five guys in the bullpen who throw 100 and all that. Again, I think got to kind of go back to maybe toning it down a little bit there and focusing on actual more pitches, quality pitches and stuff like that. I think that's a thing. And doing the cross sports. It's, again, if you're a pitcher, give yourself a break. Just because you play all the time, yeah, you will get better. But there also is, you can learn other factors and go back and play again the following year. Just playing year round, I just think is really bad. I think you got to let your body learn how to use his muscles in a different way, how to, you know, just get a different perspective. And that's where I think kind of pitching needs to change. And in that sense, again, I know position players are different. Obviously they're not getting Tommy John surgery for the most part. I think we've had like one player get Tommy John surgery. I think it was Bryce Harper or something like that. Yeah, it's a sad thing to see, but, I hope we do see some changes going down all the way to the youth level. Obviously this is not just going to happen in one day. This is going to take years to fix for sure. And I think baseball, the MLB needs to work with, you know, setting examples and all that. Let's see. Let's kind of go and I wanted to talk a little bit just about some players recently. Big surprises that just coming out of this year who've just been absolutely tearing it up. Altuve, Jose Altuve is in the 388 right now through the first 20 games. He's been awesome. He just got a new contract in the offseason, and this is a guy who is chasing 3,000 hits, and I think he's going to get there. And guess what? Jose Altuve will be a Hall of Famer. another guy who I picked to win the MVP in the NL, Mookie Betts, batting 369 right now. Went 5-for-5 the other day, although went to the Dodger game yesterday. Didn't do that well. They lost 2-0 to the Nationals. Actually, they lost the series to the Nationals, not just lost 2-0, but lost the series to the Nationals. With all the, and then another thing too, with all the Ohtani news and everything like that, guess what? Ohtani has batting 360. He has been awesome, and he is better than ever when it comes to the plate. Obviously, he will not be pitching this year, but Ohtani making himself relevant in the MVP conversation, and he will be there all year because guess what? He is the best player in all of baseball. This is the way this guy is able to hit opposite field, read the bat. He just does all the simple stuff, you know, and puts over the top. There's a home run ball that he could hit. He'll try to hit it. If he try to hit a single, he will try to hit a single. He's not always trying to swing for the fences. I mean, obviously, if there's one there, he will take it. But yeah, he has been awesome. And then I guess the other one is Juan Soto, who is kind of, you know, I think everyone's MVP favorite. He's both MVP. He was one of the MVP favorites at the beginning of the year. And he's living up to it. I mean, the guy is batting. What's he batting? I think yesterday I saw something. He was like batting like 571 with runners in scoring position. And right now he is batting 352. So it's like, man, he has been crushing it. The Yankees are awesome. They have played really well. They had a nice comeback win yesterday against Toronto in a game that, you know, it's important to take those series and get those games. Yankees are 13-6. They're ahead of the division by half a game against Baltimore. It's 12-6. And Boston's been surprising. They're 10-9. And yeah, Toronto at the bottom, 10-9. I mean, it's like that's going to be another tough year for that whole division. Other surprising notes, Cleveland, 12-6. They're right up there with the Kansas City Royals, who are set at 12-7. And Cleveland, I just didn't think they would be able to do it this year. I mean, they lost Shane Bieber. I guess, it's, again, we're only 10% away through the season. But again, if they could keep up this pace, their offense has been good. And we'll see if they can continue. But, you know, they lost Shane Bieber. I just don't know how long they could go throughout this and they could keep plugging and playing with these guys. But yeah, Cleveland, I think Kansas City's for real. I think they have really good pitching. I liked how they picked up Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo during the year. Two guys who have been really diligent for them so far. They're their first few starts. They have Cole Reagans leading the way, who is another Cy Young candidate. You have not put money on that. I would advise you to kind of go do it because you can still kind of get some nice juice at like plus 600 for his Cy Young award. Maybe it's gone down a little bit more, but yeah, I think this is going to be a team around all year. And I think when a team comes out of nowhere and you're the pitcher, you're the ace of the staff, I think that matters in voters' minds. Let's see. Tigers also, great job by them. They're 10-8. They're in that division as well. Shockingly, division in the AL West. You know, the Texas leads the way with 10-9. Angels are 9-9. Seattle's 9-10. Oakland is 8-11, and the Astros are 6-14. They've had a tough slate. They had to play teams like Yankees, Braves, Texas. I think they had two series with them. So it's not like they've had an easy schedule. But man, no one could have predicted 6-14. Do I think they're going to stay there? Absolutely not. They are the Astros. They have still really talented pitching in their bullpen and their starters, and their hitters will figure it out. I think the team is just way too talented, and they still have Justin Verlander coming back soon. Moving to the NL, Braves is expected, 12-5, leading the way. Phillies have finally put something together. They have won three straight, and now they're 11-8. But here's the other one, the Mets. My Mets, 10-8. It was hard watching them the first six games. They started off the season 0-5. It was like, man, this is going to be a tanking season. Well, they won four in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10, and their offense has been awesome, especially comeback wins. They've had a few comeback wins as of lately and just scoring runs late. They have been awesome. I can't even say what has been the biggest, like guys like Severino, who has like a 2.83 ERA or something like that. Jose Quintana, who's pitched very well in his first three starts, he has a 3.05 ERA. He's been awesome. But I mean, the Mets offense hasn't even been that tremendous. I mean, like Bader has been really good. He's been another solid pickup. He's hitting 292 right now. Alvarez hasn't kind of gotten there. He's batting 240. Brett Beatty's been great. He's been batting 305. But the two guys who have been the absolute biggest disappointments on the Mets, of course, and I got to mention Pete Alonso. Pete Alonso's been freaking awesome, killing it. 269 has, what does he have, 6 home runs. And Pete, I'm sorry, still think you're going to get traded. I hope you get traded because I want to get a lot back in return for you, man. I just don't think the Mets are going to, you know, I love that they're 10-8 right now. I just don't know if they're going to be there at the end of the year. But just because, and I'll talk about it right now, the two disappointments. One I'm shocked by is Brandon Nimmo. I'm surprised he's been batting 203. That's our leadoff guy. He's better than a 203 hitter. But the one that the Mets had to really be worried about is Francisco Lindor. Lindor has been atrocious. He's batting 151 this year. And he, it's like, man, this guy is supposed to be getting better. Since he's came to the Mets, let me pull up his stats. Since he's came to the Mets, he has not been that great. He entered the Mets in 2021. And so he started off batting 151 this year. Last year, he was kind of all over the place. He ended up finishing the year hitting 254. 2022, when the Mets made the playoffs, he batted 270. That was his best season. But when the Mets got him in 2021, he batted 230. Again, his home runs in 2021 hit 20, 2022 he hit 26 and 31. He is a really good shortstop. But man, this guy is making, how much money is he making? $341 million or something like that. It's age 30. He is now in the fourth year of this deal. I think it's a 12-year deal. Oh man, this is not going to age well, because I just don't, you know, I just don't see Lindor as the difference maker as everyone makes him seem. It's been one of those things where I'm just like, every time I see him, I'm just like, people thought he is one of the best players in all of baseball for years. And he had a great stint in Cleveland where, look, I mean, they were so close to winning the World Series. They did not. He had a few really good years there, but man, he has not been that player for the Mets. And I think they really rushed the contract when they gave it to him. I just don't know who they were competing against, there and all that. But, you know, this Mets team, who I think is just still, the goal is not to tread water here. They've spent so much money and they're paying so much money in salaries that I think they need to get young prospects and build within. And I think by trading guys like Pete Alonso and everything like that, it's going to be where it's at. Let's keep going down the list here. Cubs have looked awesome. 11-7. They have really solid pitching and they could hit the ball. That team is going to be scary all year. And I think they're going to eventually end up winning that division. Cardinals are 9-10. They're kind of weird. Cincinnati's kind of back in that 9-9 range. The whole division is just really tough. And I guess the biggest surprise is Milwaukee beating 11-6. I just did not think that. I thought they would have been where St. Louis is at the bottom of the division. Again, still early to tell. Well, we'll see. Dodgers, 12-9. This has kind of been one of the bigger shockers, them being 12-9. The first week and a half, they were crushing teams, scoring 5-6 runs a game on average. And now that they're 4-6 in the last 10, they lost, I think they're 5, and they lost 5 of their last 7. A little bit of concerns. I mean, obviously, no reactions, they're still 12-9. But the Padres, 11-10, right behind them. And, you know, Padres had the pitching. Michael King was awesome yesterday. And so was Dylan Cease. And they have a really solid 1-2 punch. And they have guys that are still going to be coming up in the big leagues. Jackson Merrill has been looking really good lately for them. And yeah, this is going to be a really solid team to come. But Arizona sitting there 9-10. They still have their top two guys, but again, I just not sure if, you know, they got in with 84 wins last year. I think they're going to be kind of back around that range. I just think the NL is way better this year. I think you have way more teams competing, and that last wild card spot is going to be really hard to get to. A lot of exciting games. I'm going to be back tomorrow to talk about what's going into the weekend and games to look out for and maybe some nice bets. Hope you guys all enjoyed the show. We'll be back. Please do not forget to subscribe to the podcast, leave me a rating and review, and we'll see you guys next time.